and welcome to the School Business Leadership Podcast, Episode 3. We are here today to talk about governor reporting and management information given to governors and trustees. James is here to tell us about that. James, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you, Emma. So my name's James Paveley. I'm the business manager at Matravers School in Westbury. Matravers is a secondary school with a sixth form, around about 850 students. And I've been working there for about 6 years.
And we also have Nikki.
Hello, Emma. I'm Nikki Wadley. I am governance lead for the school bus, and I'm also a local chair of governors and a local leader of governance for the South West.
Welcome to you both. And I'm Emma Gray. I'm at a secondary school in Stroud, 11 to 18. We are an academy and part of a trust. So we're bringing a different viewpoint of the management information that's being presented at the moment. And we will also discuss what is being proposed for September. So James, tell us why you proposed this podcast topic and how you do your financial management information.
Yep, happy to. So just before I do, can I just clarify a couple of some of the terminology that I use, because I discovered recently that some of the words that I use may not be used in the same context in each school. So for clarity, so when I talk about CFR codes, that's the big code that we've got about 40 of, and it's what we use to report to the DfE, so we're maintained foundation school. When I talk about ledger codes, the ledger codes are the ones that are like a subset of the CFR codes. So most CFR codes for us would probably have about 10 ledger codes giving a little bit more detail. And finally, the cost centres would be where we allocate it to departments or maybe the site team. So each budget or each cost centre will typically have an element of spending across the ledger codes, and they make up the CFR codes. So the way that I report to governors is I focus my report just on the CFR codes. So we get the information out of FMS via a product called Financial Reporting Suite by HCSS, or now the Access Group. And it's a one-page summary of my CFR codes. And within that, it shows my actual to date, my commitments, my year-end projections, and periods to date information as well. To supplement that, I then do a one-page summary of any key variances, and usually I'll look at variances over 5k. So they'll get in essence two pieces of paper, so it's nice and short and concise, that covers off the key information. But the thing that we've started to do recently, which I think may be a little bit different to some of the other schools, is I'll have a separate meeting with one or two governors a few days before the main committee meeting, and we will look at that in detail and go through it line by line. So where I've made assumptions about perhaps an underspend or an overspend, I can show the governor on the financial system, so literally logging while they're there, look at those particular lines and analyse and see where that overspend or underspend is. And also if it's because actually we've just chosen to maybe get some professional support rather than buying in books, I can show them how, even though perhaps one of these CFR lines looks as though it's over budget, it isn't. We've just chosen to put the spending in a slightly different place.
So that's quite interesting. You're proposing, or your system adds another tier to the financial reporting. Nikki, how do you feel about that as a governor?
I think firstly it's important to note that any review of practice and doing things in a different way is really important. Schools are transient organisations, nothing ever sits still. So I think it's really useful and important that school leaders and governing boards reflect on how they are working and make changes as and when needed. So I think that's really positive. The question I would ask about your system that you've introduced recently is how that two-tier system, or what feels like a two-tier system just hearing about it for the first time, how does that link into governance being a collective responsibility for the board, and how does the information from that meeting with one or two governors, how does that be transported to all governors, so that that kind of further question and challenge can be explored, and so that your minutes reflect that question and challenge as well. Because for us as governing boards, you know, we shouldn't, and you know, I'm sure the majority of governing boards don't do things just in a way to provide evidence of something, be that for an external organisation or for themselves. But there is something about, you know, our minutes are the only way that we can record our question and challenge and record our work and our performance as boards. So I would be interested to know how you take that information from that separate meeting that you have with one or two governors, how you take that back to the whole committee, and then that feeds back into the board, so the whole board maintain that collective responsibility for the financial management and efficiency of the school.
Yeah, that's a really, really great question. I think it. I think what we used to find was that some of our resources meetings, a number of years ago now, we used to get perhaps too bogged down in the day-to-day operational side, and that took time away from looking at some of the strategic issues. So the purpose of this wasn't to you know, hide some information from some of the governors. Quite the opposite. The purpose of this was to give governors the opportunity to go into the financial figures in great detail if they wanted to. So so this pre-meeting would typically cover you know, the projections that I've put for the year end. If we're doing the SFVS return, school's financial value statement return, then we'll be sat and going through that sort of line by line. If I've got to do a quarterly return to the LA, we'll be looking at that as well. And so what that gives the governance or governors is some certainty that actually those figures have been, you know, scrutinised to quite a high level. But there is an element of trust, because they need to know that the governor that's or the governors that have sat with me, you know, have had the opportunity to look at it. Or if you think of it in terms of maybe like a health and safety, if you had a governor in charge of health and safety, as we do, they will come in and do a little bit of sampling, looking at health and safety around the school. Well, clearly they're not going to do that during a 2-hour resources committee meeting. They would need to do that sort of separately. And for us, it's worked really well. The meeting, I do minutes. This may take a little bit of understanding, but I tend to do the minutes or 90% of the minutes in advance of the meeting. Now that sounds a bit strange, I know, and you're all thinking, well, how can you do that? But this was a talk that I went to by a local firm of solicitors, and they were talking about clerking in an academy, and they suggested that probably you could do a large amount of your minutes before the meeting. And the reason is, when I go into a meeting, I know what I'm going to discuss. I know what the key questions I need to ask the governors are. I know what they should be challenging me on. Because if I don't, then really I haven't got a handle on what governance is about. So actually, I would suggest most business managers go into a meeting knowing the vast majority of what's going to be covered. So actually, if you can do, you know, probably 80% of your minutes before, because you know what's going to be discovered, and then just adjust those after the meeting, then, you know, it just saves a bit of time. And that means that I can get those meetings finished, those minutes finished quickly after I've had the review meeting, and then off to governors, so they've got a chance to look at those for a few days before.
So is that, just so I'm clear, those minutes, they are for this second meeting with a couple of governors.
Are for the first meeting. So, for example, if I've got a return that I'm going to send to my local authority, which I do once a quarter, that says that I've got you know, a 20k variance to what I was projecting, then in that meeting they are going to ask me why I've got a 20k variance. They're going to ask me that. So actually, I can do the minutes that says that they've asked me and give some details as to why.
Nikki's looking a bit unsure about this.
It's a bit controversial.
My heart's fluttering.
It takes a bit of getting your head down. I mean, they're just, you know, let's be honest, they're draft minutes, because you know what's going to be covered.
Ooh, okay. I think my challenge to that would be, whose meeting is this? Because governance is about governors setting the agenda. And that feels, and I've not seen your process in action.
Yeah.
It's the first time we're talking about it today.
Yeah.
But that feels that your governance is led by a member of the senior leadership team, and I would always strongly advocate that governance is led by governors. So governors should be setting the agenda for any meeting with any senior leader. They should be setting the content of the report that they want you to produce and share with them and talk through. It's their meeting. It's them holding you to account for the finances of the school. And I think if before going into that meeting, somebody is saying, these are the questions I know you're going to ask, and this is the responses I'm going to give to those, and I'm actually going to minute 90% of that before we've even set foot in the door, I think that, is it too strong to say, undermines governance? Does that mean that the governors are less effective in holding you to account? Because the danger of that is, if you've got a governing board who maybe, and I don't know your governing board, so I'm not casting aspersions on their effectiveness, but if you have a governing board who are not as upskilled as they perhaps should be, if they haven't had recent training, if you've got a board who are shy on finance experience, and you know, boards recruitment is very difficult with governing boards, and we have many different skills mix, and you often have boards who you have one area that they're not so strong on and they're much stronger on others. If that is your board and you are working in that way, the danger of that is that they won't know that there are other questions to ask, and they may just take what you're giving them and what you're saying as read and accept it, and that isn't governance.
I think it's interesting what you're both saying, because often, you know, this sounds like that they're almost finance linked governors. Often a governing board will have some governors that are particularly strong on finance.
Absolutely.
And then they are the governing board feel like they are the best suited to go through the numbers with a fine tooth comb. And this is what seems to be, you know, working well. I would say we haven't got your governing board here to say, you know, that they're very happy with.
And that's what I'd be really interested in, is to understand, you know, the impact that your board feel that this has had. Because, you know, it's all very well me sat here kind of sharing my opinion, but I very much believe that governing boards need to create a system that works for them and their school. You know, that's really important, because we all govern in different contexts. We all work with different people. Governance is as much about relationships as it is anything else, and I think all of those things are critical to effective governance. So I would never sit here and say that's not the right way of doing it, but the governor in me will always ask you questions about
that's
it.
That's
and challenge
fine. Because I do get it, and it does take a little bit of thinking outside the box to you know, to decide, actually, do you know what, that's not as scary as it sounds. But if I give you a couple of examples, so the review meeting that I've got in front of me now that we did about 9 months ago. So on that, we were talking about large payments that we'd made. So any payment over 10K gets signed off by a governor. So I know that we're going to discuss that in the meeting, because I need to get their approval. I know what payments I had over £10,000. I know those payments were previously advised to governors, and we've got them in the full governing body minutes to agree them. So it's right that that they should see them, but actually I know the conversation, so I can minute that we've discussed them. I can minute the ones that we looked at, and I can minute that they were approved. We were looking at the SFVS. Well, I've been in discussions with the governor to do that. So I know that needs to be on there. We were also looking at sampling, and I think in this particular occasion, I'd sent them my finance report and said, okay, we'll pick three or four lines off of that that you want to sample, and we can look at that at detail so that you know that it's all been you know, above board and where the figures have come from. So I can go into that meeting knowing that they've asked me about CFR codes 1927, income codes 1, 2, and 12, and I know what the variances are on those codes. So actually I can, it's not to steer the governors about what they should be asking me, it's about to save me a little bit of time typing up the minutes afterwards, because I've already done most of them. And of course they can ask whatever questions they want, and they're at liberty to, but I'm just trying to speed up the process, because what I want to do is get those minutes to the main governing board as soon as possible. They have their meeting on a Tuesday, I'm doing this review meeting on a Friday. Within, you know, half an hour, an hour of that meeting, then I can get those minutes updated so all the governors can look at them over the weekend.
And presumably the governors at this meeting can raise questions and other governors can continue to raise questions. It sort of clears off the nitty-gritty of approving payments that they've already approved and then moving on to, but you, those minutes that you're showing us, and we're trying hard not to rustle paper here, those minutes that you're showing us make up the governing body minutes.
Yeah, make it. Yeah. They will be presented. It's effectively a report.
So maybe
I've called it resources review meeting. So maybe if I call it a report instead of calling it minutes, it's a much more comfortable. Okay, I do a report which I send to the governors.
That was going to be my next comment. It feels like a great report to provide governors before the meeting. Yeah. And I would wonder, do you provide them with that ahead of the meeting so they have time to review the information that you're taking to the meeting? Because that's really important as well. It's really hard as a governor, speaking as a governor, to have anything tabled in front of you and then be able to contribute to that meeting in a purposeful, effective, robust way. But that feels like a really nice, sound report to give to governors.
I've changed my mind. It is definitely a report. It is not minning. It's not minning.
My heart is settling.
Right. So
my work here is done.
We use SharePoint. So all our governors have got a school email address. They've all got access to our SharePoint site. And ideally, we would get all the documents for the meeting uploaded the weekend before.
Yeah. Excellent.
It's great to hear that all your governors have got school-based email addresses and that you're using SharePoint as well.
That's one thing we find quite hard as a trust, actually, is making sure we can share that information. We've been looking at Google Teams, I think it's called, and how we can use that so that everybody can have access to everything whenever they need it. It's proving quite a challenge, but we're hoping to get something set up for next year.
Google Teams is quite new, isn't it? And I think, you know, there are many boards who are looking at low cost, no cost options of sharing information and how they can be accessed in meetings. I think that's really important.
Well, we use Office 365 in the school, so we've already got the rights to use SharePoint, so it is no cost to us. And it doesn't take long to set up.
I really like SharePoint.
It's a really great way to share information.
So as a contrast, I bought mine along too. We are a little bit more rustly of paper here because they're on A3, so and we're still very paper based, but we're a little bit different because we're an academy and part of a MAT. So our trustees have to look at more than one school. They obviously have to look at the money that they are, particularly the central funds, and they have to look at the trust as a total. And so we present it in a way that it's all on one sheet. So it's quite, it's all separated into headings, but it gives them an idea of where they are. Now, interestingly, you said that you have you include commitments, because we had a internal assurance visit and they were recommending that we start adding a commitment, because we don't currently put a commitment in. The way we do our outturn to governors is we have budget forecast, year-to-date actuals, and then the percentage actual against forecast, so the governors can see, for example, that in period 9 they have spent 75% of their budget, therefore they are on course. But as the our auditors pointed out, it might not show the whole picture, so we're now looking at adding that commitment in. Commitments does seem to be an FMS thing. I remember from my FMS days, and commitments was a big thing, but we use Sage, so it's not something that we're currently including, but we're turning round back to that.
Well, I think for FMS, it just, you know, if we raise a purchase order, it puts the commitments in there. So actually, I'm not doing anything other than just printing out the information that's there already. And then the staff commitment is there for the whole year. So you just need to sort of get your head around the fact that some things will show the whole year's worth of commitments in there ready for you. So staffing, some of the direct debits we may have sort of committed on there. But then other things like department spend, obviously the commitments probably just appear when they order something and then disappear when it's been delivered and you've paid it. But I think you need the commitments in there, really, just to give you a sense of it.
And then, of course, the other thing we do report to the trustees on is the metrics with ICFP, integrated curriculum financial planning coming in. We've started to to show them some of those metrics so that they can look at themselves against benchmarking. And I think from the paper you've given us, James, you do some benchmarking as well.
Yeah, so I've done a couple of things. I mean, I go to the government's website and print off the benchmarking figures each year, and what I've done there is a little sort of summary as to how we compare to our other schools that have got similar characteristics. Personally, I tend to just choose schools with default characteristics, because I think if you start to pick the schools that you're going to compare yourself to, you sort of lead yourself open to a little bit of being a little bit vulnerable. Well, actually, you've picked those schools because they show you in a better light. So I just pick the default one. And then we're also looking at doing the integrated curriculum, financial planning, some of those ratios. I mean, I think at the last count, there were 6 or 7 different versions of different people's tools. So at the moment, I'm working on trying to just extrapolate that information and see whether you get the same result for each one.
I would say that there are some really excellent tools on if you put .gov.uk in. They've got things like the self-assessment toolkit, curriculum planning spreadsheet. All of those tools are used to help you work out your ICFP metrics. Nikki, what's benchmarking? How important do you think it is for governors?
I think it's really important. I think it's important that governors see outside of their school context. And you know, if you're looking at financial efficiency, benchmarking is a really important way of doing that and ensuring that the school are. It gives governors a opportunity to ask those questions. So you know, why is that school spending that amount on? You know, that area, and why are we spending double that? What's that about? And there might be a really good reason, and there might be a really contextual reason for that. So it just leads into them being able to ask those questions and to be able to really have that oversight over the bigger picture that isn't just insular to the school that they're in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And in fact, that's now part of the SFVS annual process, is to put your figures in and benchmark those. So so governors should see those over the next 12 months. Personally, I know on that they tend to benchmark against expenditure. I'm not completely convinced that's the right way to do it. So I would encourage you, if you can, to benchmark against, you know, percentage of income as well as percentage of expenditure.
We've always traditionally ratioed against income, and they're now moving ratio against expenditure. And I think if you are a school in looking at a deficit budget, then that's an interesting one to look at, looking at against expenditure. If you are not a school, then the income is the one. And I think then now moving towards doing both so that you can compare.
We have had really interesting conversations around potentials of deficit budgets and the SFVS. I always get my acronyms the wrong way around. Because I think there is a desire to tick off an SVFS to show that you're compliant and that you're working in the right ways and efficient ways. But actually, there are some really tricky decisions that go on behind kind of getting to that point. So we have included much more of a narrative with ours this year, and really talked about, you know, yes, we are coming in on a balanced budget, but next year and the year after, we're not quite so sure where we're going to be. And we've had to make these decisions to get to that, because I think it's important that that isn't just seen as a single tick box exercise, but actually you tell your school story behind that. And I think governors are in a really useful position to direct schools to do that. So we had quite a robust conversation, and I think, you know, school business managers might think, oh, I don't want to do that. It might not feel a very natural thing to do, because, you know, you want to show that you're compliant and you're meeting all the areas of it, which is really important. But everything is about context, isn't it, and balance.
Yep.
And I think telling that story and really highlighting some of the challenging, difficult decisions that have impact on different areas in schools, to have that balanced budget or not just tip over into a deficit. Or if you are, why are you, and what decisions have you had to make? Because it isn't all about poor financial management or lack of efficiency, as you know, some people would lead us to believe. There are some, you know, some schools are making some really, really difficult decisions, and I think that process gives us that opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I think it was interesting that you both said about the you know, the budget for the next few years. So we do a 5-year, you know, 5-year budget plan as part of our model. And I know that, you know, a lot of schools will think, well what's the point of that? Because who knows what's going to happen in, you know, in 2 years, let alone 5 years. And I get that and I understand that. But it's something, it's a bit of a plan. I've got a, you know, a rough idea that, okay, maybe in 3 years' time, I might be able to afford to do this, or maybe in 4 years' time, I might be able to afford to do that. And the extra effort to actually, well, certainly from the software that we use, to extend the budget from, you know, 1 or 2 years up to 5 years, it really makes no difference. You know, you maybe assume a little bit of inflation on some lines. You probably know what your staffing are. You maybe assume they're going to move up the pay scales. And then it's only the one-off expenditure that actually requires, you know, perhaps a little bit more thought in each year. So I really would, you know, encourage schools to be doing the three or five years.
Five-year budget, I think, is certainly, so it's so useful to have when you're making those decisions, or when you're sitting in SLT and they're looking to you for an informed decision on whether they're going to be able to afford that in 3 years' time. And 3 years doesn't give you that little bit more of enough, in my view, of that trend. 5 years, I would recommend a five-year budget.
I 100% agree. Definitely do it. It's a strategy, and it may all change, but that's all right. That's why you review it in a year's time and start again.
Hmm. And that's what we were talking about before the podcast began, wasn't it, James? That, you know, schools are such transient organisations. You know, they change year on year. The educational landscape changes. You know, nobody and nothing stands still. But I think to have that plan in place that gives you that wider context, that wider suite of information, if you like, is really important for basing those decisions, but also to help the governing board understand where the school is going. So when they're looking at priorities, we're just talking in our school now at not having a year-long school development plan, but extending that's 2 to 3 years, because, you know, you look at your kind of very specific target. So if you're looking at something like, I don't know, improving maths for boys and boys who have additional needs, for example, you're not going to achieve that in a set point from September the 2nd 1 year to August or July the 15th or whatever it will be the following year. It doesn't work like that. Children don't learn like that, and teaching isn't like that. It's you know, it's very it's movable and it has to be flexible. So we're looking at extending our school priorities, and I think that's important that the budgets link into that and reflect that as well, and that planning. And so if you're planning your budget over a longer term, if you've got your school priorities over a longer term, the two just knit nicer together.
We've just done that with setting, we've just finished setting our budget for this year as maintained. My year starts on the 1st of April, and we did we split in terms of the resourcing. We split what we wanted to do into that we really probably didn't have much choice over, and that we'd like to do. So for example, we know at some stage we need to replace our servers, so I've provisionally booked that in to do in a couple of years' time. Maybe I can, you know, get some extra money and we'll do it sooner. Maybe I won't be able to afford it, but I know I need to do it. And then we've got another section of things that we'd like to do. So we'd aspire to maybe improve our theatre or get a big outside shelter. And I think that's really helpful. So that the governor's found that helpful in terms of looking, okay, well, we know the school's got to do this at some stage, but actually if fairer funding comes in, because that would be a big difference for us, a tremendous difference, you know, what could we do then? So I think, yeah, forward planning is definitely the key.
Decisions that were made in governing body meetings this month will have an effect on decisions that will be made in governing board meetings in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years' time, because those cost decisions have an impact on future funds and what more you can do with the limited resources you have. So I think that's really important.
So the last thing you brought to us, which my ears pricked up because you were talking to Nikki about it, was your governor's induction.
Just after one of the meetings, we'd had a new governor joined us, and I realised that, you know, yes, they'd got some up-to-date financial papers, but they probably didn't really know where we were, you know, what the bank account arrangements were, you know, what the last LA outturn had been, you know, whether we were completing our VAT returns on time. So there's a whole bunch of reports that get produced over the course course of 12 months. And so I basically put a pack together. It started off as a Word document with about 20 or 30 pages, I think, but I'm just going to move that into OneNote, if anyone knows what that is. And then each page has got some different bits of information on it. So one page will have this year's budget. One page will have the latest income and outgoing return that I sent to my local authority. One page will have a list of the key suppliers. And I mentioned to you earlier, Emma, one of the things that I was conscious of is, you know, if you ask governors to declare any interest, they probably won't actually know who you're dealing with. So by printing off a list of our major suppliers and who they are, that just gives the governors the opportunity to think, well, actually, I do know those people or I don't know those people.
I just think that's genius. I never thought of it before. And that's why it's so great to have this sort of conversation, in that you come in with something that I hadn't really even thought of. It's amazing.
I think it's great. As a governor, I can see how useful that is. Yeah, if you've got a changeover in staff, and you know somebody doesn't know who signed that agreement, or you know what date that contract is up for renewal, if you've got all of that in one place and everyone has access to it, I think that's really
useful. It takes a bit of time to pull it all together, but then the reality is that maybe only one or two pages will change each meeting, because.
You could start small with just, you know, some of the key things that and build on it as you go along. I think that's I just think it's a genius idea.
Great,
I'm taking
you.
That one. I hope you don't mind. So the other thing we should talk about is moving forward, because things, as you said, Nikki, things change very quickly in schools. And I noticed that one of the Academy financial handbook is saying specifically now we should be reporting income expenditure, cash flow, balance sheet. And I know a lot of schools and academies already do that. I have to admit that we don't at the moment report cash flow, I guess because we have had money in the bank. I always think once you get to that sort of tight stage, I know I should be doing it, I'll be doing it from September. Perhaps I shouldn't have admitted that really on air, but I know schools are, but it's becoming now a requirement of the Academy's financial handbook, and it's something that we've got to sort of take in our stride as we go along. And we noticed that the SFA are also encouraging academies to take on CFR consistent financial reporting codes, which for us will mean quite a major change to our nominal ledger. But for you, clearly, is what you're currently doing.
Yeah, I mean, I find it really easy, and because obviously that's what we're used to, and then obviously that then helps with benchmarking. And to be honest, I was surprised the academies didn't have to do it, because I'm guessing that all maintained schools did it, so I don't know why that practice maybe didn't carry on. I mean, it's interesting that you should say about the cash flow, because I do, a bit like you. We've been reasonably okay in terms of money for the last couple of years, and that does make it easier financially, because we've taken some tough decisions, and that's given us a little bit of money in the bank that is depleting, as most schools do, and I know that the time I spend on the finance, it is going to increase, because when you've got less money, you need to spend more time managing it, ironically. So we need to look at that. But the one thing that I've also done recently in terms of the report to governors that I found, probably the most powerful thing of all in terms of where the school is just like a monthly, what was your expenditure? What was your income? What was the position last month? And then just plot a chart. And that's incredibly powerful in terms of where the school's going to go. So basically, if it's flat, great. If it's going down, well, how quickly is it going down? And if it's going up, then maybe you're not spending enough. I don't know. That's a bit unlikely in schools. But it's just, it's one visual that you can relatively quickly put together and probably summarises the state of the school more than all the other detailed reports would. Unless you're saving up for a big project or something, and then it gets a little bit confusing.
As a non-numbers person, visual works every time for me. So as a governor on your governing board, I would be very appreciative of that.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I think we've covered everything that we set out to. I hope you found that interesting on financial management in schools, and it's been great that we've been able to take some different viewpoints and look at maintained and academies. And thank you both very much for coming along. And we'll see you next time on the next School Business Leaders podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.